It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hi, this is Strider. I've been playing Neverwinter Nights 2 for several years. Started with the Unfinished Tales, or the precursor of that, called The Rise of Sauron back in 2010 as a player. Eventually had the opportunity to become a DM and took that further with The Witch King, who's the lead developer for The Rise of Sauron, in the second version of that, and had an opportunity to help him out in development, along with a few others.
Hey, this is Ben, a.k.a. DM Silver Adept and Aaron of the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Hello, this is Tillian. I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons for 25 years. I've joined the development team in December.
And this is Brian, aka Sir Brian, and the Neverwinter Nights podcast. And you're listening to the 196th episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, the podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games and the MMO Neverwinter by Cryptic. Well, it's been a little while since our last podcast. Life has introduced some wrinkles, so to speak, working 70, 80 hours a week for the last month and a half. But we are back, and we got a lot of episodes that we're going to be cranking out. Tonight's episode is the first of our very five last episodes that we are going to have. We will be finishing up in Indianapolis in August. We're going to be at the Gen Con Game Fair from August 14th through the 17th. And, we're going to be doing something a little bit different than we've done in the previous years. We're going to be there 3 days. We're going to be there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And we're going to be doing a lot of, on-the-fly recordings and different things and a lot more coverage than we did last year. I mean, we did a good bit of coverage last year, but we're going to even go a little step further this year and really focus more on the convention as well as the interviews that we have lined up. So I know, Ben, you've been talking about some interesting strategies to get some more content.
Yeah, with Gen Con and Mars stuff, but I'll focus on Gen Con for this one. Basically, the big plan is we've done going to events, we've done going to things, for example, we saw Patrick Rothfuss and some of that stuff. This time we're going to try something a little bit different and try not to end up spending 3/4 of our day in the press room interviewing people and seeing a bit more what people do, what goes on. Maybe grabbing into a random event or two, but just kind of seeing a bit more of trying to get the spirit of Gen Con as opposed to just kind of, hey, we're at Gen Con, we saw these people who are CEOs or other business leaders for where things are going, but just a bit more of the fan side this time.
Yeah, I think that's a great strategy that's really going to help us get some more good content. And like you said, capture the spirit of Gen Con. I mean, that's something we really hadn't done the last our events. We were more concerned about getting the people on. This year, we're wrapping up, I think it's really good to take advantage of this last opportunity to really get in there and to show people what really goes on at these conventions who don't go to them or haven't been able to go to them. We definitely have a lot of good stuff planned. It's going to be, and we have a third person coming this year too, which is going to be helpful.
Right.
That's a big deal because now me and Ben both can be in frame doing stuff and we have a different cameraman than one of us. We're going to go the more ghost adventures strategy with the three. So we're going to have that going on for us. We've just got confirmation that we will be interviewing Shane Hensley for the fourth time now. It's been an honor to work with him and to actually have him on the show. And for those who don't know, he's the owner and CEO of Pinnacle Entertainment Group, and they produce great games from the Savage Worlds line and the Weird Wars Rome and all the different Weird Wars products. They've been very extremely successful in the pen and paper realm, and he's a great game developer. He was the executive producer at Neverwinter for the first year or so that it was getting rolled off under Atari and with Cryptic. So I mean, it's just been a lot of experience to work with him and to talk to him about his experiences in the gaming world and just in playing games, period. So this year, you know, one of the key focuses that we're going to have in the interview is we're going to be talking about his role-playing experiences. And, you know, from if you watched last year's episode 180, he had a very interesting and hilarious story about playing a kobold. And, you know, so, I mean, it sounds a little corny on its face, but you have to listen to the episode to hear about it because it was extremely hilarious in the fact that how well the story was told. So, you know, we're going to have a full episode of that, plus all the new stuff that he's been working on over the last year, you know, albeit Kickstarters and other products that his organization has put forward. So, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff coming from that. I'm going to be sending some lines out to Maxwell Alexander Drake to touch base with him again, since I'm almost positive he's going to be there this year. And he's always been a great friend of the podcast, and he's always given great interviews as well, as you know, on his writing and now his work with Sony on the EverQuest series. So, you know, we'd like to get him back on to see how things are a year later. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But that's coming up. And as I said, this is the first of our five last episodes. And the last two episodes, just so everybody's aware, in episode 199, we're going to be doing a Reflections episode. You know, so Mad Mage, Mark, Shook, and me and Ben are going to be rolling on talking about our tenure running the Neverwinter Nights podcast since we took over in 2011 from Jay and Trey, which, you know, obviously did awesome work in the first, you know, 5 years that they had ran the podcast, and doing all the great stuff that they did to get everything set up and to actually found it and to maintain it for all those years, and for us to, for the last 4 years that we've almost 4 years that we've been producing episodes. So I mean, it's been a really big honor to have the podcast. So we're going to make sure that we go out with a bang. You know, we're going to have two episodes. First will be the Reflections episode, and then the one after that will be all our Gen Con coverage. So you're looking at least 3 hours of coverage coming from this convention, if not more. So, and we're going to be putting a lot more into it because we're going to be there longer this year, and the fact that, you know, we're going to have less official interviews. So we're going to have at most like maybe three, more likely two, and we're going to kind of really hone in on the Gen Con experience itself. So
definitely.
Yep. And, you know, moving on, we do have one piece of Neverwinter news. Neverwinter is planning on releasing very shortly here another character class with an expansion called The Tyranny of Dragons. And they have this new class called the Scourge Warlock. And, you know, it looks really cool. I was watching the promotional trailer for it, and it's pretty darn cool. It's very reminiscent of the Warlocks in Neverwinter Nights 2, the Amon Jarrow type character, and the abilities are really cool. And you got to check out the video. I'm going to have that link to that in the show notes. It's really good stuff, and you know, they've pumped out a significant amount of new classes and content over the last year, and you know, from its release last June. So it's really exploded in the amount of player content that they've introduced. And the Foundry community has been punching out a bunch of new stuff as well, you know, using a lot of the new stuff that's been made available to them as well. So they're taking a good full advantage of the content as well. So it's really good. It's really exciting to see that how the game is maturing over, you know, its first year and how things are moving forward. So, you know, definitely check it out. We'll have a link to that in our show notes. So, hey, Ben, you have any other final thoughts before we get in with the Unfinished Tales, folks?
No, I think that was about it.
Sounds good. Tonight we have a repeat guest, very close friends with the Neverwinter Nights podcast and the Realms of Trinity, both fellows, the server previously known as the Rise of Sauron, and now the Unfinished Tales. Really great to have you guys on. Thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks for having us, Brian.
Yeah, you know, to get started, I know it's been a little while since the last time we had a chance to catch up and talk about things. You know, can you, you know, go through a little bit about yourselves, how you got into Neverwinter Nights 2, and you know, how you got working on Unfinished Tales?
Well, I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons mostly for probably, I don't know, off and on, my earlier part of my life, a lot, tabletop, and then I got into Neverwinter Nights 2, kind of found the Rise of Sauron. I was a big fan of Tolkien's writings, and I, you know, kind of got to meet Witch King. I think he did an excellent job with the Rise of Sauron, and had an opportunity to become a developer with that. And since the last time we talked, that was about the time we released the second iteration of the Rise of Sauron. And since then, Witch King, myself, and a few others, Tillian and Dame, and a few others, have had the opportunity to kind of take the Rise of Sauron Part Two offline and you know, refocus our strategy for a much larger world and, in essence, more or less a swan song of the many iterations of the Tolkien-based role-playing games on Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2. And that's kind of where we are now. So,
well, when I started to play on Unfinished Tales at the end of December 2012, and well, I played for about a few months, and then I left Neverwinter Nights 2 for a hiatus, and then I came back the next year, and I played for some time, and then Martin asked for people to help with writing conversations, dialogues, etc. So I offered my help, and then Martin contacted me and then gave me information. He sent me the quests. He told me, "You have to go ahead, work on this. Put what you know of Tolkien in it." I'm a big fan of Tolkien's writings, so I intend to put a lot of what makes this world.
That's awesome. So this isn't your first thing that you've worked on, or you've worked on some other things before that?
This is the first time I'm working in the tool set for Neverwinter Nights 2.
Well, you brave soul.
He's a quick learner too, I'll tell you.
So. That's awesome. Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit before we start recording, but it really is. It's amazing to see folks like yourself getting involved at this 7 years after, 8 years after the game is released, and you know, jumping in and learning the tool set and things like that. It's really encouraging.
Yeah, like Olmo said, I'm a quick learner, and well, the tool set isn't that really hard to get into. It's really easy to understand. I don't work with areas. I don't create NPCs, etc. I only create blueprints. I don't put them in game. So that's we divide the work pretty well. So I only have to worry with what's in front of me. So Martin is very supportive with that.
Well, that's great. Yeah, you definitely have. Sounds like you really have a really strong setup on how you're approaching development and everything like that. I know Martin. You know, he and I worked together extensively not that long ago. And, you know, he really has a good grasp on how to organize things and really plow through things. So all three of you have been really kicking butt, and, you know, we appreciate it. It's a lot of great work out there.
Thanks.
So you guys have mentioned how some of the things have been changing and how, you know, things have been switched up a bit. Is there anything specific that you guys would like to mention that's changed since the last time we had you on?
Yeah, again, we had The Rise of Sauron was released, and we had, you know, a pretty extensive world compared to the previous iterations that were there. You know, again, a lot of the development work has been passed on, you know, from Neverwinter Nights 1. Ideally and structurally, some of the stuff was copied in Neverwinter Nights 2, replicated. Rise of Sauron was more kind of a step away from a lot of that and kind of went into a different direction. The areas were quite extensive, and for this iteration, we actually the way we stand right now, we're over 450 areas, which was almost more than double than we had in our last persistent world. We've got over 150 creatures. All of them have been are brand new creature. I could say abilities and all of that have been redone. I know Brian, you and Martin have collaborated with some of the areas previously, and we also collaborated with you on some of your random spawning functions, which really, really made a difference in our world. I have to say, and we have to be thank you very much for that.
Oh, you're welcome. Definitely.
And again, we're also from a class perspective. We previously had, you know, in essence, certain races and alignments were turned off, you know, and people had to earn the right to get that. We had, you know, some issues, and I would say issues, but we had some folks that would like it a different way. So in this new release, we're opening up all the races and all the alignments for all to play, which I think will be interesting. And I think it's going to draw some a different class of players that we didn't have previously. But for the most part, we're really looking at the writings of Tolkien and a lot of the MERP, Middle Earth role-playing information that's out there. You know, I think we had, you know, kind of a snapshot, a portion of the world that is written in Tolkien's writings, we've really expanded that and pretty much have the complete world north to south, east to west, that folks would recognize in the movies, that would recognize in writings, and so on and so forth. So a lot of effort has been put by Witch King for amazing areas. And what I've seen so far, completely different from what we had previously. And I think the player base is going to be very excited and happy about that. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, you really dove in and took care of business, sounds like.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Yeah. Very nice.
So out of curiosity, I know this is a bit of a side question, but since you mentioned going into all the writings of Tolkien and everything else, and I realize, especially among the various groupings of, be it nerds, be it fans, do you guys feel that you guys have sort of looked at it at the way supposedly they've looked at it for the Hobbit movies, or are you guys seeing it as more staying truer to things, or how do you...
I'll let Tillian answer that, because I think the quests are one of the things that's going to set this apart from the previous worlds, and that's really going to give the flavor of this persistent world. So Tillian, if you maybe just give a little bit of time for your vision on how you see this world, in the writings of Tolkien, and it's a good question. I think The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings maybe have different views of the world. So maybe you can talk about that.
Sure. Well, one of the concerns that I've heard many times is from people who wanted to play on our server was that they didn't know enough about Tolkien. They didn't read the books. They only saw the films. So they didn't know if they knew enough. Say you play on a Forgotten Realms persistent world. You want to know the lore. You want to know you're playing that race. You want to know how to play it, etc. So in order to get into our persistent world, people were concerned that they didn't know enough. What I do is I make sure that people know what's essential to know about their race. So when they join in, they'll have a few quests where they'll learn about how to behave according to their race, according to their classes, the main cultural trends and the way of thinking of each races. I'm going to make that plain. I don't want to force people into one specific type of role play. Role play is vast. You can play however you wish. However, there are some, of course, cultural guidelines to follow. So I want to make sure that everyone that joins our server is aware of that. Our website is very detailed regarding this. We have a lot of information on how people should view the world around them. So I believe that players will have an easy way to join the server. Also on alignments, we use only the evil and good axis of the alignment. We use evil and good only as guidelines. If you have the evil alignment, you're from a group of people in Middle Earth called the Men of Darkness. And if you have the good alignment, you're from the Free Peoples. It doesn't mean that if you have the good alignment, you're a goody two shoes, that you have to give money to the poor. You're not white and black and white type of role play. There's a wide range of role play that you can take from. So you can do whatever you want, as long as you don't say if you're evil. It doesn't mean that you can perform sacrifices on a daily basis. It's just that you're part of a culture that believes that Sauron is a god, so you act like he's a god, he's your king. So that's the direction we're taking. You don't have to know about Middle Earth to join the server, but if you do want to learn more, there's plenty of occasions to do that.
Very nice. I mean, that's a very, very solid approach to, role-playing in general. I mean, role-playing has been, I don't know, it's one of those things like where if you really can't get too overbearing about it, because there's plenty of places if people really want to go to the hilt, they can go. But you also don't want it so open that it reduces the immersion factor, and the fact that the way you balanced it out, and the way that you're framing the good versus evil, and its actual implications more than just, okay, like you said, you can't go killing people every 5 seconds, whether it's a sacrifice or something else. I mean, it's just a very balanced approach, and it seems to be very, very good. So, you know, moving on, you know, what is your plans for your world moving forward?
Okay, well, again, we kind of have some of that. I would say in the past, we had a single starting area for everyone, except for special races. You know, in this particular iteration, we have 19 starting areas. So what we actually have are, in essence, 19 different silos, and each player is going to have an opportunity to explore and learn about the areas that they're starting in essence. And as Tillian had mentioned, the quests are going to educate folks that may not have that much information or knowledge about the lore. And then they're going to have opportunities to go into the other silos as they progress, as their characters advance. So that's one of the things we're looking forward to. You know, we're looking forward to folks that actually, you know, are very hardcore into the lore. They can, you know, they can explore the area they've wanted to explore, be part of that culture, you know, that kind of thing, and truly immerse in their characters. So we're kind of excited about that. Again, with the good and the evil, we're kind of looking forward to this. I know it's kind of some persistent worlds. They allow the good versus evil, and that kind of thing. We had discussions about player versus player. You know, it's a sore point for some developers, as you may know, because again, you have a strong player base, and if you're all for the player versus player, then it's kind of fine. But sometimes it takes away from the immersion.
Yeah.
Some folks don't like it.
Nope.
We've kind of taken a stand where we're going to basically kind of, you know, if players can role play up to a point where they do that, then we would do it in DM events. We're not going to allow it just random kind of thing there. You know, we're more or less going to move forward with that and see how it goes in the early on. That's always kind of been an issue with some. I don't know, Brian, if you have similar experiences, maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, actually, you know, for player versus player, yeah, we had a problem with that about 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Where it was causing way more grief than it was worth. So what we decided to do was to approach it as very much the way you're doing it right now, where basically it's not legit. You know, and we actually, you know, only time it's really loud is if it's like you said, a DM sanctioned event, or in the arena, two consenting players who want to test out their builds against each other. That's fun. They can go in the arena and they can put your PvP flag on and hammer it.
Yeah.
But at least it's not interfering with others' gameplay. So that's right. How we've handled it, and we haven't had a single bit of problem with it since then.
And I think you kind of brought forth another issue too about you know, some players may know a lot about the lore. They truly immerse in the characters. And then some people, again, they more or less, you have like a hack and slash type of style of play. And we want to be open to both types of styles of play. But again, we want to try to make sure that both folks understand that you know, you want to try to respect the game more or less. And I think that's true for regardless if it's a Tolkien-based world, if it's a Faerun-based world. I think that's the important thing, so...
There's going to be a place for conflict, but we're going to make sure to include that in our stories. So it's more of a conflict based in our stories. So.
Yep.
And that makes total sense. I mean, you know, just to have arbitrary, you know, slaughter fest in the middle of the street somewhere is, you know, definitely doesn't lend itself to a playing environment that you said. You know, you get people coming on the server that don't have that kind of background whatsoever, and they see that going on, they could be turned off pretty easily to it. And it's something that, you know, you're going to, over the course of time, when you see like a lot of the PvP going on or that type of discussion, it'll end up in the area like what we're talking about now, is where, you know, you have to kind of put some kind of limitation on it or something. It just can't be left you know, hanging out there.
Yep. Agreed.
So, out of curiosity, as we go through things, what's your opinion of the Neverwhere Nights community and the player base these days? I mean, we know it's been taking a hit, especially since GameSpy went down, but what do you guys think of the overall status so far?
Tillian, you want to take that one, since you've been a player more recently than I?
Well, it's unfortunate that the community is dwindling down. We want to keep as many people playing as possible. So we don't view our server as a way to get players from other servers. We want to keep the community going, and we're only one outlet for them to join and play a game. If they like Tolkien, they'll play on our server. They'll find other kinds of role play anywhere else. So if they want, we encourage them to play on other servers. So it's really unfortunate that there's not that many players. We hope that there'll be more than that joining eventually, but we do our best to keep the players interested in the game.
Yeah, you know, I guess this persistent world has traditionally had a pretty strong player base that, you know, can go back to 10 or 12 years, starting with Neverwinter Nights 1 and the token-based world that started there. So you have a core, you know, maybe 12 to 17 people that actually will come and go. They'll always give this world a try, and we're basically appealing to them to play. And, you know, I guess for the most part, from a development perspective, we'd be happy with just a handful of them, you know. But we want to have a vibrant community, and we'll try to market this as much as possible. You know, again, Neverwinter Nights 2 is an older technology, but I will have to say that you know, I find that I've always been kind of stuck playing on a work computer, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
And as I can tell you that in the last 3 years, I'm finally getting the technology for my work computer that actually makes the game look better. So I know it's a 9-year-old game, and I never had the high graphics card. But now I'm finally getting to a point where my work technology actually makes the game look very beautiful. And I gotta admit, it is a very cool game. The fact that it's an open development game is amazing. And I'm actually kind of sad that Neverwinter Nights 2 is not having a Neverwinter Nights 3 with the same type of openness, with the tool set available for developers, because it really is. They've done a great job with Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 to have this development community. And again, it's collaborations like Witch King had with you, Brian, that really made a difference in our game. And you've been here, you know, trying to promote development for a long time, and I thank you for it.
So. Oh, no problem, and I appreciate that. And you're absolutely right. I mean, collaboration in the openness of the environment are really quintessential for how long it's been around. I mean, those are bedrock things that you need to have a application last this long. Even with a dwindled player base, it's still way more than you would ever see anywhere else.
Yep.
So, you know, and on top of that, too, like you were talking about, it's a shame about Neverwinter Nights 3. There's nothing like that. It's true. I mean, you know, Neverwinter, you know, was developed in the sense, it was kicked off by Atari in the sense that it was going to be an MMO, sure, but more like Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2, but at least open to a much broader community. But it didn't go that way. I mean, you know, the foundry, it, you know, in my mind, you know, after working with it for a while and, you know, talking to a lot of developers and episodes of the podcast, community leader, you know, even the CEO of the company, I don't think at this point of the game that there has been a lot of attention paid to the foundry and to the engine itself and the type of environment it is. It's, you know, to make it the Neverwinter Nights 3 that people were really looking for. Yeah, sure, you're going to get the money. Sure, you're going to get a bunch of, you know, millions of players who just want to click mouse buttons and all have cookie-cutter characters, you know, or have the same stats, it's just different levels. I mean, it's going out. It's, you know, honestly, it's a shame because, you know, a Neverwinter Nights 3 or at least something in that arena would have been really nice to see and to continue the development cycle that was started, you know, over a decade ago with Neverwinter Nights 1.
Yep.
Agreed. Yep. A lot of good stuff is coming, including your server and all the great work that you're doing and other people have done. You know, it was a vehicle for a lot of people to get involved and actually learning how to build a game. You had the foundation, so now you go in there and now you're like, "Hey, look, I can do this. I'm learning how to script, I'm learning how to build areas." That stuff translates to other game engines too, so it's not like you're not learning a skill that you could not apply somewhere else if you so chose.
Yep.
Yep. You know, talking about that, you know, what type of new features and or content are you currently working on or plan to work on that you're excited about? Like, you know, what kind of stuff do you have in the cusp that you're chomping at the bit to get done?
Well, I think the new Arius, a lot of effort and hours have been spent with the new Arius, and I think for those that have been familiar with the movies, would immediately recognize some of the areas that we had previously on our server. It was an excellent representation of an artist, the representation that's been seen, I should say, and I think the Witch King is taking that a little further. He's really, really done an excellent job, and quite honestly, this is a hobby for all of us, and so I'm very happy that he's actually had the time to put into this game to really just expand the areas, the very rich features in the areas, the new creatures, which would be a change from what folks were used to previously. A lot of effort's been spent there, and quite honestly, I think the quest, and I'll let Tillian talk about that, but I think one of the major efforts was trying to change the quest and make them just allow the amount of quests. I should say we're shooting for a lot of quests, and I'll let Tillian tell you how many, but I think we're trying to push this as a game that doesn't necessarily require a heavy DM presence, but we plan to have that anyway. So Tillian, you want to take that as far as the quests are concerned?
Yes. The previous iteration of the server had about 120 quests, and there was one starting location, and all the quests were for everyone. Now we're expanding the different areas to 19. So 19 times 120 quests, that's a lot of quests. Of course, we're regrouping the quests together. We're linking some races together, some races that have reason to meet each other. So there's going to be the server is really quest intensive. There's a lot of place to adventure. There are a lot of places. Middle Earth is a vast world, and with that many areas, there is a lot of ground to explore for adventurers, players. So I believe that players will find, whether they find bounty quests, carry and fetch quests, that sort of thing, if they like these quests, or simply to explore a new area they haven't explored yet and find a quest, there'll be a lot of advantages to that.
Very nice. Yeah, that sounds awesome. The way you're blowing out the content like that, that's amazing.
And we have the portion that we continue to have as far as the minerals, the wood, and the craft. Previous persistent worlds that we had, a lot of effort was put into the crafting system. That's going to change a little bit, but it's still there. We have random resource spawns, thanks to you, Brian. And that's always been a big thing. I think the crafting part of the world was always something that you always had something to do, more or less like these games that just keep you going, keep you interested. There's always something to look forward to. The crafting system is something that we've always had positive feedback from. That it's, if you finish a quest, you just want to kind of spend an hour playing, you can go and craft, and it's always something that's fun as well. So we're retooling the crafting system, but it's not going to change that much. And I know a lot of folks were happy with as it was previously.
Yeah, I get a lot of comments about your crafting system. I mean, yeah. Top-notch crafting system. I mean, I have players that say, man, them guys did it over there. I said, oh, I'm fully aware. I said the old Witch King's been on my rear end for a while to implement. I agree. I mean, after looking at it and actually having worked with it, the spawning system, after seeing how it worked and everything, it's ridiculously awesome. Nobody's going to touch your crafting system. No way, no how.
Out of curiosity, is there anything that you guys would love to do but just doesn't let you do it?
I was hoping that Witch King would be on for this portion, this particular question. From my experience with the tool set, and it's limited, and Tillian is learning the tool set now as well. I find it to be quite a powerful tool. From what I can see, the tool set does pretty much give you the ability to do a lot of things. I don't know if it's just maybe some more graphical enhancements. I guess some of the hack packs. I mean, honestly, we've seen some cool hack packs. We've had some issues with horses, I should say, to be quite honest with you. You know, I wish we could get that to work properly. I'm not quite sure if Brian, you had similar issues on yours.
You're talking about the RWS horses.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. We never, because of the limitations on the racial models, like certain races, they didn't appear right on them because it wasn't meant for them.
Right.
We decided that what we're going to do is we're just going to limit them to NPC usage only for ambience. Yeah. That's it. Because it wasn't done. It wasn't completed. Great idea. Just not finished.
Right. That's one thing, I guess, you know, that kind of stands out because When we had it implemented, and folks, you know, I had a horse as a player and as a DM, the folks loved it. I mean, it really was something we had a quest that could get you a horse. And, you know, just I'm hoping that maybe some additional development work might be done there. We'll keep an eye out for it. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I can't remember when that was that particular hack was touched. I know it was a beta, and it never went past that. It was probably about 2 to 3 years ago now, I would say.
Yeah, it was a beta, but and they did a great job with it. Again, you're right, though. We had you know, folks would jump on a horse, and then they'd jump off, and they would end up. so we would have to, you know, we'd have to do some help, you know, a little work to help them out. But But honestly, the tool set is quite powerful, and I'm impressed by it, and it really does fill most of our needs, and we're quite happy about that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know that just from our 6 years of working on stuff, I mean, there's a lot of things when we first started. Obviously, we didn't have the knowledge nor the know-how to do half the crap we ended up doing, but there was always been a couple categories I put development into when you're breaking ground, like this dynamic spawning system or other things like that. You know, the first category is stuff that, hey, you get a good idea and you're able to work it in the engine. And the engine's, you know, it's flexible enough that you can actually do that. But then you have the other categories of things that you do. Whereas, you know, you get done about halfway or something with something. It looks good. It's coming together. But then there's always that one stupid thing that you can't fix because it's just not the engine doesn't allow it, or there's a bug with something, yeah. Or it, you know, there's a way people could easily break it or something.
Can I ask you something, Brian?
Yeah, sure.
How many hours do you think you put in for the dynamic spawning system? Just out of curiosity, because honestly, it's a game changer, and we're so happy with it. But I'm just curious because, you know, it's an excellent excellent feature.
I would say the feature itself from front to back would have took probably no less than 240 hours, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a constant. You know, I worked about 4 weeks straight on it, you know, hardcore, because it wasn't just, you know, coming up with the design. I mean, we had to build all the database components. We have the administration tool, which you're well aware of, and the Windows service that runs on the back end is every so many hours that actually does the randomization that's based off the configuration data. So, you know, if you add all those pieces together, not counting the playtest, you know, okay, counting the playtest and, you know, making sure that it's doing what it's supposed to do and everything. Yeah, I would say no less than no less than 240. I bet it was hurt.
yeah, it's an excellent feature. But Tillian, as a player, or you know, since you've been on the other side of the fence now, is there anything that you kind of felt that wasn't there as a player that you think should have been, or you know, now that you're in the tool set, what are your thoughts on you know, functionality, capability, and you know, as far as what's not there?
Well, from the work I'm doing on the tool set, I don't see right now things that should be improved. Of course, things could always be improved, but right now they work fine. I don't see a problem, and I don't really see what else I could require for my needs to do quests and conversations. Mm-hmm. The quest journal is very useful. It's really easy to use. And building a conversation, if you know what functions to use, It's quite simple. I don't have any extra wishes. I don't have any other ideas what could be improved.
It's kind of funny though. You know, this is something that the main feature. I mean, obviously the main features that we, you know, we've developed over the years. I mean, yeah, we sat down. You know, it just came out. It came out trying to find ways to, you know, reduce the amount of time that we had to keep spending on development. How much work that we were going to be doing long term. So we kind of looked at ways to try to minimize that and to give a better experience to the players. But I'll be honest with you, a lot of the features that we ended up implementing later on past that were all player inspired. I'll be honest with you. I mean, it wasn't like we sat around and we were like war chest in a war room and about stuff to get the features that we had came up with after that. It was really a lot of the players' ideas. And then we just took them to the next level, you know.
And we always constantly get player feedback, you know, can you do this, can you do that? And honestly, that's the thing. Some of the quests are coming from other players. We're getting ideas. We're reaching out to the existing community, asking them for help. And we've had questions from players, you know, can you do this, can you do that? Please do this. And honestly, you know, we try, but, you know, the development team is small and limited. And quite honestly, I was a player. I volunteered. Tillian was a player. He volunteered. And, you know, but that's the thing. We have volunteers that actually it's a hobby. We take time out of our lives to put into it. And we'd love to have 10 more people that actually have the time to put into it, learn a tool set and you know, put in those hours to make those additional features. And that's really what it comes down to. So.
Yeah. And we're really lucky to have the Witch King because he's been with the project from the very beginning, I believe. He's had about 12 years of experience in the designing and the development. Yeah. So we're very lucky to have him. I'm not working from scratch. I'm working on what him and others did on previous iterations of the server.
Right.
So it's made easier.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Witch King has done, you know, tremendous work. I mean, I could say that. I mean, you know, having worked with the tool set not quite as long as he has, I mean, you know, I could see, but still a long time, I could see like the quality of the area development that he has done. And not only that, I mean, just the immersion. I mean, looking through the module when I was fitting it originally with the dynamic spawning system, I mean, I was sitting there like, man, that's good. Man, that's good. I opened up another. Man, that's good. You know, just looking at the stuff that was being done. I mean, it's inspired me a lot of ways to do things a little bit differently, or even add on some things that I not originally thought to do. I mean, so you know, I learned a lot too. Even you know, just looking at the module itself and the work that he's done, and you know, as the team has done over the years. So I mean, it's definitely something to be extremely proud of.
And we grabbed a few of your areas as well and incorporated them. So yep. we're kind of happy about that as well. So it's you know, the collaborations were it's a good thing. And
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, when I look at you know the collaboration that we had, and you know, I've actually had collaboration from module developers too. I mean, Lincoln Robinson actually developed two full quests for us. Cool. I mean, yeah. and we put them in. I mean, it was, and that's the kind of stuff that you know I really wish that we could do more of. But you know, like you said, we're all doing this as a side venture hobby type of thing. We all got a day job. We're all, you're at the whim of your work. Obviously, you have to be. Yep. Yeah, that's the only thing that you really wish you could sit down and say, man, wouldn't that be nice if we could just do this 24/7, you know, it would be freaking awesome, you know. But you know, that's just one of the things, you know, with the player base, what it is. But if the player base is like 50 times what it is or 100 times what it is, yeah, we probably could.
Yeah.
You know, we probably could, you know, just from donations alone, you probably could. But it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. We could all dream, though. Yeah. Well, anyhow, it's really been great to catch up with you, and hopefully we'll get Witch King on some point here before we turn the lights out on the recording studio here. But before we close this episode out, is there any final thoughts or anything that you thought of during our conversation that you'd like to bring up now that we hadn't talked about or anything like that? Even the Hobbit movies that are, you know.
Well, I say I'm very excited for the last Hobbit movie. You know, to be quite honest with you, I think if they had an opportunity to develop the shows like they did for Game of Thrones on the books, for the Tolkien writings. I would be very interested to see a few seasons of Tolkien's writings on HBO.
Because there's a lot of things that that aren't seen on the movies. A lot of it is unsaid. So a lot of things to explore.
Right. And the movies can only go so far. But hey, that's the way it is. I will say that, Brian, thank you very much for continuing to foster the development of Neverwinter Nights 2. Again, this is a completely free hobby for all the folks that are involved. Again, I'm just happy to have a small part in this great persistent world that the Witch King is driven to develop. And any players that are listening to this, please give our persistent world a try. It's going to be very close to what you've seen in the movies. We try to stay true to the lore and the spirit that we feel Tolkien has represented. And again, just thanks a lot for the opportunity to be on this podcast. Tillian?
That's what you said was just amazing. I don't have anything to add.
That is true. It was amazing. And definitely it's been a pleasure to have you on again. I mean, I'm really glad that we've been able to, partner up over the years and really help add to the player experience across the board, hopefully bringing some players in. To experience Neverwinter Nights 2 at the way it should be experienced, and not the buggy instance that came out in 2006. I'm really glad that we work together, and I can only hope that we're going to keep this up for quite a bit longer, so that we can even do more stuff that we want
to
do.
Yep, and good luck to you and your future endeavors.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you, and we're going to be unveiling a few things here in the next couple episodes. Actually, episode 199 is going to be we're going out to Gen Con for two episodes. So, awesome. we're going to talk about that coming up in the next episode or so. And, we got a lot of good stuff coming, and we're going to be meeting with some more folks in the gaming community, like the big wig, so to speak. So hopefully, things continue to keep moving in the right direction, and we can continue the dream of Neverwinter Nights into the future.
Honestly, we're free. It's great technology. It's great development. Play. We're free.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is free, and that's the way it's going to stay. So, well, I wish you the best of luck, and feel free to reach out to me anytime you like if you want any updates. And we're going to be on up until the end of August. So, if you have anything that you like to add, or come back on, or even just have us post on our site, we'd be more than happy to do that. Just let me know.
Thanks for your time, Brian.
No problem. And until next time, get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.